The story went up on Sportsnet.ca yesterday, and I'm guessing he has been busy answering questions about it since. Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet, our Sportsnet insider, joins us. Good morning, Elliot.
How many tickets did you buy for tonight, Dean?
You know what? I forgot all about it.
He hasn't paid for a ticket for anything in a decade,
at least.
It's because I'm. Now, is there a pot?
I know
calling?
You like your basketball too.
Yeah, I'm a huge hoops fan. And secondly, if there's a bigger pot calling the kettle black, it's about Warner chirping me for free tickets. Not sure, but nonetheless, it's been an interesting 24 hours. Obviously, here since the story that you threw up on the web on Sportsnet.ca. I guess just take us through the. I get a phone call with the agent, how it came to be, and the conversation you had with Johnny Gaudreau's agent.
Well, you know, I think for a lot of things, we've been trying to constantly call these guys, and, you know, there's a number of restricted free agents, obviously Trouba, Reeder in Arizona, Kucherov in Tampa, Lindholm in Anaheim, and we've just constantly been calling to see if anything changes. We've been calling both the teams and the agents. And, you know, last week, Kurt Overhart, who's the agent for Trouba, decided that he was going to make his statement and make Trouba available, so a number of us spoke to him, and since then we've just been intensifying our attempts to reach people. And yesterday, Lewis Gross decided he was going to answer his phone, and he made the comments that he did. So that's pretty much the process. As you guys know, because you're in the business too, you just keep calling, and for every 10 calls, you hope that you get something out of one. And yesterday was the one.
Yeah, Rhett's never made a call in his life. He's shocked to hear that's how it works.
I order pizza once a week.
Yeah, he orders food.
Calls to order his free tickets.
Yeah, that's right. So what was the, and again, here I am trying to get you to put yourself in the mind of Lewis Gross, but was this, the tone, is this one of just very matter of fact, this is what's happening, is there some frustration, what's your read on where they are?
I think frustration is fair to say. I think that he's frustrated, as I'm sure the Flames are frustrated too. A number of these teams sound like they're at impasses with players. As far as I can tell, I think Raquel and Anaheim are getting closer. But, you know, unless things have changed in the last 24 to 48 hours, Calgary and Gaudreau, Tampa and Kucherov, you know, it's tougher to tell what's going on with Lindholm. You know, Winnipeg and Trouba, it doesn't sound like they're Buffalo and Ristolainen, it doesn't sound like they're really moving anywhere. Now, again, things could have changed in the last 24 to 48 hours, but a lot of these at the end of last week were very stagnant. And I think there's some frustration. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau at the World Cup made it very clear when he was talking to Eric Francis that, you know, he wants to play and he wants to get going. So I think frustration is probably the word. I think, like I said, I think both sides are frustrated, but there hasn't been a lot of movement. Now, it's not unusual, I will say, for teams and their players to go a while without talking. It does seem unusual that it's been this to the season. I'm just curious. Like, I think what we're sitting here in Calgary is our two sides sitting at the opposite sides of a table, and both are refusing to blink. And I'm not convinced the number for Gaudreau is going to be 8.25, but what I do think is if it's 8.25 because Calgary's number is right now about 6.4. Right. And at one point, somebody's going to move. And I'm curious if yesterday moved that needle at all, but somebody's going to move and we're going to get a better idea of what the real number is going to be here.
Just, I guess, curious, because looking at the timeline, I know you kind of laid it out there, that next Friday will be a month or however many days it's been since the end of the World Cup. We're talking about 3 weeks, and was a good chunk of that not the self-imposed no-chat zone by Gross and Gaudreau?
Yes, that's true. You know, I think there is some truth to that, absolutely. He said no talking during the World Cup, and I raised that to him. I did say, you know, hey, you said that, and he said, okay, but look at the calendar. And I guess that's why I wrote it two ways. You could say the World Cup ended last Thursday, but Gaudreau hasn't played since the previous Wednesday. So, I mean, basically, whatever it is, it's pretty clear right now the Calgary Flames have dug a trench, and Louis Gross and Johnny Gaudreau have dug a trench, and they're sitting there, and they're both in their trenches, and we're going to see who's going to move. And obviously, I think we're getting close to the season.
Yeah.
And it's interesting here. I think the biggest thing is that Gaudreau, and like a lot of his brethren here, doesn't have the leverage of the offer sheet or the arbitration in the summer.
Right.
And I do think that one thing that does happen is when you're a player in this situation, it's one of the few places in the CBA where the team absolutely holds the hammer. And teams fight to protect that a great deal. And it would not surprise me in the least if Calgary is getting pressure from outside. You can't cave in this particular situation. And what I think the Flames have done is the offer that they've made would be the highest ever, I think, for a player in this position. But you know that the player's going to push for more. And I think it's all going to come down here to who decides that they're going to blink first or move first.
Elliot Friedman, our guest. Just one last thing I want to get out there before I know Rhett wants to chime in. One of the also very important things from your article was, you know, you kind of asked, Trouba has gone public with a trade request. That's not the case here.
Well, I said to Lewis, I said that's the first thing that people are going to want to hear. Is that what are Johnny Gaudreau's intentions now, especially now since the Trouba has decided to go public and Reeder is getting close to doing it too. I don't think he has officially done it, but I know that he's thought about it. And he said no. He said flatly that it. I said, have you asked for a trade? And he said no immediately. And I said, well, could that change? Are we getting to a point where you will? And he just basically said, I don't have the quote in front of me, but it is as he said. He said, he made it very clear. And I know the words at this time are like waving a red flag in front of a bull. You know, I think that's the lawyer in him saying it, but I got no impression that that's the road that Gaudreau wants
to
go down.
I have the quote here before Rhett jumps in. We have no intention of asking for a trade at this time. He wants to stay in Calgary.
Yeah, and sometimes people look at this time and say, oh, that could change next week, and it always could, but I really got the intention that that was not the desire. Like, and the other one I've heard from the outside, it's tough because Tampa and the agent don't talk, but I don't think Kucherov has any desire to go anywhere too. Although I think what happens is that as you get closer and you go into the playoffs, minds get warped and things start to change. But I didn't get that impression that was happening with Gaudreau in Calgary.
I've been through this scenario myself personally, and I won't call it bad advice, but I would call it average advice. I mean,
it's closer to bad.
I basically had to go in and negotiate the contract myself at the end of the day after sitting there, and I lose a couple paychecks, and I'm like, what am I doing? Is there a blame game on this? I don't know Louis Gross from a hole in the wall, but players put a lot of faith in their agents. And sometimes I wonder if it's should be put in those.
Well,
guys.
You know, I'll tell you this. I think at the end of the day, I've always looked at it this way, Rhett. It's my responsibility, right? You know, like I have a lawyer who negotiates my contracts, and whenever I've done it, like he comes to me and he says, this is what we're looking at. And he'll tell me, I think you should accept or I think you should decline. But he always says, ultimately, it's your choice and what to do. And I do believe that. I think that at the end of the day, it's your life and you have to make those decisions. You should listen to advice, but you should make the call yourself.
And how many times, though, like looking back, I remember when also the union used to say to guys, you got to get as much as you can because it sets the stage for everyone else.
Well, I know people say that. I don't know if I buy that anymore.
Well, maybe and not anymore, but it for sure was used to be that way.
It used to be that way, Rhett, but you played a lot of your career before the cap came in. I do think that sometimes agents say, look, I can get you the best contract. And I know they do because the agenting business is a tough, dirty business, and they can knife each other pretty good. And so agents, I think, do say to players, you know, I can get you the best contract. But the whole union thing, now, You're right. When there was a time before the cap, absolutely they did that. You know, you got to raise the number, and in other sports it certainly happens. But I think now, if you're a player, you're getting 50%. That's the CBA. You're getting 50%, and the league is getting 50%. And if you look at the way the CBA works, the more that number goes higher, then the more escrow you have to give back to the league. So the CBA works that if everybody's going out for the best deal now, then it hurts the group as a whole. That's the whole. So if I'm the union, I'm not so sure I'm pushing that narrative anymore.
And what about, you mentioned it's Treliving's first GM job. How much of a tone is he trying to set, and how much pressure is he getting, do you think?
I think there's always pressure. Like I said, it's a part in the CBA where the teams absolutely have a hammer. Like, I talked about this with another GM yesterday, and he said to me that he thinks that Calgary and Treliving in particular have done the best job that they can do without getting everybody angry at them. They know that the Calgary's in a very unique position. They've got a really talented guy here, a top 10 scorer. Goudreau is going to be a heck of a player. And you can nitpick whatever you want. You can say, hey, you know, he doesn't have enough points on the road and all that. But the other teams in the league know that Calgary's in a bit of a tough spot because they have to give the guy a big deal, even though he's not arbitration eligible or offer sheet eligible. And I think teams understand that. But I also think they sit there and say, well, okay, you can go to 6-5 or you can go to 6-8 if you really want to, but if you go to 7.5 or you go to 8, that's really tough. So I think Treliving's walking a fine line, and I think that he's done, you know, you can't look at his offer and say, Johnny Gaudreau is not getting it, that Calgary is killing the guy because he has no leverage. They're giving him a contract, which, from what I understand, will be the biggest one ever for a player with Gaudreau's lack of bargaining power under the CBA. But I still think there's pressure from other teams not to go too far. Now, I think the other thing, too, is, and this is not to knock Eric, because he's a great reporter, and I would have done the same thing. His story that came out, and I don't know where it came from, I know that really angered the Gaudreau side, because it made him look greedy, right? So that adds to the whole issue there.
I keep looking at Vladimir Tarasenko's deal and Aaron Ekblad's deal and think, okay, so they in the Tarasenko comparable, he does have those rights that you talk about, at least the offer sheet one. But
yep.
Gaudreau's way ahead in point production and in fewer games played coming out of his entry level. I mean, the offensive comparables would put him absolutely around 7.5. Is it just the lack of an offer sheet that's going to keep it under that if it happens that way?
Yeah, I think that's the way teams look at it. You know, and I mean, that's why the agent's fighting it, right, Ryan? That's why the agent's sitting there and he's saying, look, like, I don't care that my guy doesn't have that leverage. I think he's a max player or close to a max player. And that's the agent's job. But the way that this league works, at least from a team standpoint, is you get, unless you're an exception, you get paid based on your leverage. And, you know, it's interesting now. Edmonton got a lot of heat for giving Hall and Nugent Hopkins and Eberle those deals. And now those deals are probably the way most teams are going. But if you look at 2 years ago, Boston had two guys who were in the same position as Gaudreau. They had both Krug and Riley Smith. And they gave them one-year deals and then put, I'm pretty sure, although they won't admit it, other contracts in their desk drawers, and said, okay, another year we'll give you these deals. And that's pretty much what happened. Because teams do want to protect this particular hammer in the CBA. That's what makes this contract different. Now, I think it's also an unusual year because we're seeing all these unsigned deals. Like, when was the last time we went into training camp and saw six guys like this not signed? So it's either the cap is tight or teams are decided they're taking their stands, or I don't know what else it is, but we're in a pretty unusual year this year.
Philosophically, what's changed?
The other thing, Dean, we should mention, and Rhett, I didn't get a chance to mention this to your question, is what's the last leverage the player has? The team starts 0-5.
And I go back and forth with that because I have sat out. The team starts 0-5, yeah, it's bad. But 2 weeks go by and you miss a paycheck, and the amount of money that he's making, those are big checks.
Yes, it is. And you always worry. I understand that. I think at the end of the day, like, I think Sean Monahan's right. I think this gets done. I think both sides move and this gets done. I just, you know, I'm really curious. Like, the one thing I've tried to ask people is, what's the number? Like, what's the real number here? And I can't pin that down. I think Calgary wants it to start with a 6. I think Goodrow wants it to start with a 7. But at the end of the day, you know, where is that? Is it 6-9? Is it 7-2? I can't pin. A lot of these, I can look at this and say, I kind of know what the number's going to be. I'm not sure in this one where it is going to be.
My thoughts are, if it's, call it 7. In 7-8 years, when the deal's done, I'm guessing it's going to be a long-term deal.
I don't think there's any interest in doing a bridge here.
Yeah, no. You're going to look at it and go, that's a great deal.
The other side of it is too, Elliot, it's hard to know where each side is on term.
I think it's going to be long-term.
Yeah, but I don't think
there's any desire in doing a bridge here. Like, yeah. You know, one of Lewis's Gross's recent clients who had a battle was Brandon Saad. And Chicago traded him to Columbus because they couldn't get him signed. And one of the things that I was told was that there was no interest in doing a bridge deal for Saad. And I don't think this is any different.
Boy, and at the end of the day, you wonder about Saad. Where would he rather be? Making decent money in Chicago?
I think Columbus and Chicago talked about that last year, but they couldn't make it work.
Finally, I guess...
I think at the end of the day, look, like I said, I do think this gets done. I just can't tell it. Like, normally I have a pretty good guesstimate of where the number is going to be. I don't know what that is right here.
The kind of the last one on this for you. Everything is strategy and all of that. Lewis Gross talks to you. He knows you're going to make it public and people are going to get talking. Does this put the sufficient pressure on Brad Treliving, like Gross obviously is hoping it does?
Well, look, I can tell you, when I called Brad yesterday and I said, look, this is the info I got, and, you know, there was a pause, and he just said, and, I could tell he wanted to talk. He really did. But he held it in. Like, he paused, and he held it in. And I was like, spit it out, and he wouldn't do it. I think that there's always strategy in these things, right? He's trying to get Lewis Gross is trying to tell the Calgary Flames fans, look, your team hasn't negotiated with your star offensive player in a month. And there were, like, I don't check my Twitter mentions often, but I did yesterday just to see how people were reacting. And there were people looking at that and saying, what, a month? And there are other people who look at it and say, well, obviously, they're feeling pressure, and the Flames should continue to turn the screws. So I do think it works in some ways, absolutely. And I'll tell you this, as a reporter, I'm never going to complain about somebody giving me a quote. Like, we sit here and we say, guys won't talk to us. We can't knock them when they do. So that's kind of the way I look at it. But I think at the end of the day, when you're a team executive or you're an agent, that's part of the job. You take the heat. You don't run from it. It comes to you. And I think, you know, if you're Brad Treliving or you're Lewis Gross, you're hoping that either your organization understands and respects what you're doing or your client understands and respects what you're doing. And at the end of the day, you're the people who are in the front line, and it comes with the job. You take the heat.
It's funny, you know, the reaction comes in, and it's all kind of tempered. It's very much a Treliving better know what he's doing. It's a this is good if he gets signed in that high 6, low 7. But if this doesn't work, then there's going to be hell to pay. So I think people are kind of respectful of the hard line negotiations to a point, so long as they get this guy signed, right? Because if he does come in somehow under 7, and I don't think he will, but in the neighborhood of 7 as opposed to 8.25, that's a victory for the Flames.
You know what? To me, at the end of the day, if players don't get signed, it's a loss for everybody. Yeah. And it goes to a bit what Red is talking about. You know, it's interesting now. I think the players, having been through, what, 3 lockouts now, well, nobody would go through the first one. That's a long time ago. That's 20 years ago. But I think there's an understanding among the players of, you know, we better get what we can get while we can, because the escrow's high and we're going to get locked out. That's what they think. And, you know, I think that fuels a lot of this too. Like, Stamkos and Hedman took discounts, I think, this past year from Tampa. Stamkos could have got more on the open market, and I think we all know Hedman could have next year. A lot of guys aren't willing to do that anymore because of what they've been through with the league. So I think all of that, Dean, pollutes the waters too. It's like, I better get what I can get because I'm going to get locked out, or I'm going to get the escrow take a huge bite off my paycheck. So I think in some ways what the Flames are dealing with here is a feeling among players that the league is going to get me at some point, so I better get everything I can. And that makes it a lot harder on everyone too.
Appreciate you coming on, fella. Good to talk to you. People are happy to hear you. Happy to hear your voice.
Very happy.
Very happy.
I'm happy.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Thanks.
So happy.
Stay in touch. Anything you hear, let us know, all right?
Yeah, and like I said, I think this gets done. I think it gets done before the season, and I just can't tell you what the number is.
Thank you, Elliot.
All right, guys. Take care.
There you go. Elliot Friedman.